Hello, and welcome to Understanding the World of Cats. This is a live educational teletalk that is being recorded. The podcast is provided by Terry O'Hara, professional animal communicator, and it is the property of AnimalWise, LLC. Please do not duplicate, sell, or forward this recording. If you have any questions or comments regarding the content of this talk or animal communication, they can be directed to Terry's website at www.animalwise.com. That's www.animalwise.com. Enjoy the talk. Today we are going to be enjoying the benefit of a teletalk. And for those of you that have not participated in one, basically what this is an opportunity that I have started to be able to reach clients all over the country, families and friends of clients, because not everybody can attend the classes that I offer, which predominantly are currently in Colorado and Oregon, and occasionally other locations if they call upon me and I travel to them. So this is an opportunity to bring different topics, and you will see on my website there are podcasts for a whole variety of topics to help everybody learn more about the animals that we love. This is to increase the bond that you have, increase the relationships, and also to have fun. It's a fun, easy, convenient way to kick back and listen. Talk is a little bit over an hour, and it gives you an opportunity to listen, learn at the convenience of your home or out on a walk with your iPod or in whatever form in which you're listening to it. So today we are talking about the world of cats. And the goal of this talk is going to be to understand cats from their perspective. I am fortunate to have a teacher and guide by the name of Merlin. He is my beautiful, now 7-year-old black and white kitty. He is a very wise boy that I had the luxury of meeting when he was about 10 months old, and I rescued him. And he has guided me for some of this talk for all of you, as well as many animals that I have worked with. The many wonderful wise cats of my clients have helped contribute to this talk. So today I just wanted to emphasize with Merlin, he says to tell all of you, his first and most important message is that we are felines, period. He loves that we all want to figure cats out. And he says, all of us felines love that you want to figure us out. However, we do like being vague, mysterious, and sometimes even confusing. So love me as I am, and let me be me, and let's learn the world of cat together. They will get their messages across to us in whatever ways they need to. However, they can be very difficult for us to understand. And sometimes it's in fun and it's in jest, and sometimes it can be important regarding health issues or issues around safety or keeping them indoors or well. So sometimes it's not a laughing matter, and we do need to get through to cats, and I'm hoping to help you in today's talk in ways in which you can reach them better and help them understand you better. But first, we have to understand them better. I'm going to tell a little story about when I first met Merlin, and then I'm going to go into a story that Merlin told me on behalf of all the cats. When I first met him, there was I used to live in Colorado in a town called Evergreen, and there's a natural pet supply store that has a room that houses cats who need homes. And in the room, it's for the Evergreen Animal Protection League, and they don't have a shelter. So they house these kitties, and they're all different shapes, sizes, ages, from kitten on up. And so I would go by once a week and just volunteer on my own and go in and check on the kitties because there was lots of turnover. And some of them were extremely stressed because they were in a room full of cats and they were free to move around, or if they were too scared, they would put them in a cage. And it was a very loving, comfortable, safe place. But I would always go in and check on them and just give the new guys an opportunity to understand why they were there. I would help them understand they were safe, they were no longer a stray. I often didn't know their story. There was nothing in writing on them, but I would just go in to help them feel safe and help them understand the purpose of why they were in this room and why they needed to kind of tolerate it for a while. And I also would always encourage them to remember they could pick their humans. So one day I went into the cat room, as I always did, and I would go to the middle of the floor and just kind of squat down, and certain ones would come visit. I never knew who, and of course there were different cats at different times. But one day when I walked in particular, I looked into a corner and there was a cat carrier tree thing. It was kind of a combination thing. And out was this beautiful face poking out with a, you know, black furry head, long hair, and a beautiful white markings on his face, and a black heart on his nose. So the way his markings were such, the heart showed up. It was very beautiful and very sweet. And I said hi to him, and he said, hey, how's it going? And when I found out if a kitty needed some help, I spent time with him. And if a kitty was okay, then I moved on to someone who needed me. And I said, do you need anything? He said, nope, I'm fine. So I proceeded to interact with several other kitties and check on them. And then the next week I went back and squatted down and was tuning into some animals. And I turned around, and sure enough, there was that same adorable black and white face peeking out. And I said, hey, you still okay? And he said, yep. And the third week I went. Same thing happened. I look over, and so the third week, my head said, I wonder if that kitty's okay. He's always in that spot. And in walked a volunteer who was actually cleaning the room, and I said, do you know that kitty over there in the corner? And she said, yes, he's wonderful. He comes and he greets every new cat, and he takes care of them, and then he goes back and retreats and just hangs out, and he's also the one that will come out and break up kitty fights. And I said, well, that's good, because I keep getting that he's doing fine, but I just wonder, because he's always tucked away. I never see him out and about. And she said, nope, he's wonderful. And they called him Oreo at the time. And so when she left the room, I turned to him, and I said, I'd love to see the rest of you. You just are so handsome. I'd love to see the rest of you. So all of a sudden, one big old paw stretches out, big old white paw. And then the second paw stretches out. And then he starts to climb out real slowly, and he says, you watching? And I said, yep, I'm watching. And he climbs out, and he saunters over to me, real seductive-like, just showing off, being really cute and really handsome. And again, I was squatting down, and he hopped up his front legs onto my thigh, and he proceeded to reach out with his face and lick my cheek. He gave me a kiss. Well, needless to say, I knew he was in the cat room and needed a home. I was sold. If he was a salesman, I was just sold. My heart fell for him. And then he got down and he said, is that what you needed? And I said, I guess so. And he walked back over and laid down and took a nap, and I helped the other kitties. Well, I couldn't go to sleep that night thinking about this beautiful boy kitty. And I knew I was going to be getting a new cat in my life someday because my elder had passed about a month earlier, but I wasn't planning on it quite just yet, but that's all out the window. And I share this story because one of the things I do with beginnings of animal communication consultations is I ask people to share the story of when they first met the animal, what occurred when they first met the animal. And often they were chosen by the animal, and I believe I was chosen by Merlin, who is now Merlin. We did not keep Oreo. And I feel honored to have been chosen by Merlin. And I believe that all of us are chosen, and relationships come forward for many, many reasons, and there are purposes. And also, I share that story because he was being so very cat, and he did it his way, and I didn't judge it. I just admired it, and I rolled with the punches, and he's never kissed me again to this day. And that's okay. That's fine. He's a lover boy, and he's very cuddly and everything, but I'll always remember him sauntering out, showing off, looking handsome, flirting with me, coming up, giving me a big old kiss, and me just being a puddle in the middle of the room knowing, that's it, I've been had. So I want us all to think about how we first fell in love with our animals, and especially when you're talking about the world of cats, because we love them so dearly, and yet us humans often want to understand them. And as Merlin says, you might not be able to understand us. So he has a little story that he wants me to share, and then we'll go into details. His story says to all of you about felines in general, admire me, for I am a feline with deep ancestry. Although I have chosen to join you as a domesticated friend, I do this with the understanding that I will remain true to my species. And as I do this, there will be times that I will baffle you. I like it this way. Change is an unpredictable factor in my behavior. I may be set in my ways and never budge with your attempts to change me and my habits. But on the other side of this apparent rigidity is an unpredictable ability to change at any moment. I may do this on purpose, or I may change without self-awareness that the change is even about to occur. I do not need to understand which form of change is occurring, so I will not have detailed answers for you as to why I do what I do. My world is my environment. I sense and feel everything, from the gentle breeze in the air to the underground currents of Earth's movements. I am always aware of my surroundings. This high sense awareness must be so, as it is a requirement before I could become a cat. Your love is precious to me. I like to enjoy it in so many ways. but these may not match the ways you like to share your love. For example, we need to talk about touch. Touch? Well, that's a loaded subject. There is so much energy coming from you when your hands pet me. I may snuggle into the stroking, I may purr loudly and receive joyously. However, I may also suddenly and abruptly disconnect from you in order to stop the touch. I can overstimulate at times. For some felines, touch is never comfortable, for it makes us feel unstable to take on your energy. Usually, we can enjoy the best part of touch, and that is sharing of love. But we ask for you to just please try and understand that at times we are unpredictable to ourselves, so we will be unpredictable to you. Our gratitude is great, and we appreciate your efforts on our behalf. Thank you for all that you do to care for us, and always know we appreciate the meals you present. We thank you for sharing your hunt. We are honored by your love. I love this story that Merlin told me to share, because I feel I could go on and on and on, but I feel that does get a good gist of felines. And just kind of puts us into the right space to begin to think about them and talk about them and share in the ways in which they like to communicate. So we're going to talk about a few methods, we're going to talk about a few manners in which affect cats. For example, indoor living versus outside living. For many of us, this is truly a dilemma. And there are no perfect answers. Because of our lifestyle, us humans, we have chosen, for most of us, to live in things called houses, and we have chosen to live on things called streets, and we have chosen to create cars and drive cars. And once upon a time, it seemed okay to have cats out and about. Number one, I think we weren't as fast-paced. Number two, I think it wasn't nearly as crowded. And number three, I think we didn't have quite the bond with the animals way back when I think of my parents' generation. I don't think they thought of the cats in their lives as family members the way we think of them as family members. So we have more of an attachment. Not that anybody had an easy time losing a cat, but if a cat got killed by a car, for example. But it's very different. The relationships and the manner in which we've come to embrace these beautiful beings and how they've come to embrace us is a much tighter bond, and we want to treasure that more, and therefore we want to keep them even safer, to keep them with us longer, to help them have a nice long life. So, are there any good answers about indoor, outdoor? You know, if you look at one versus the other, I don't believe so. I don't believe saying that, you know, keeping a cat indoors, which I do choose to do that for my cats, but I don't believe that that's necessarily a perfect answer, because along with that comes issues. Issues of boredom, issues of confusion for them, issues of needs to touch the earth. So I try and work with the issues with my cats as well as all of my clients' cats. And we have to look at what's working for them. Obviously, with the outside world, there are risks. There are dangers. There are cars. There are dogs that could chase them, hurt them, kill them. There's wildlife, depending on where you live. Even in some of the suburban areas, I know in Colorado and Boulder, for example, it's right in the middle of a town, but there are coyotes and there are animals that can get and kill cats. And then there's diseases. It's much more rampant to have cats that are out and about getting in cat fights or being exposed to wildlife or being exposed to different contaminants and et cetera, that they can get diseases and catch things from one another. So a couple of examples to just give you kitty perspectives. I had a kitty named Bugno. He was named after Gianni Bugno, who was a famous cyclist, a French cyclist, who was long and lean and big blue eyes, and so was Bugno. He was a Siamese, snowshoe Siamese, and a beautiful boy. And he constantly wanted to get outside, and it was a constant struggle for me from kitten up. I felt terrible not letting him out. I lived in the suburbs. And I knew I wanted to move to the mountains. This is when I lived in Colorado, and I knew I wanted to move to the mountains in the next few years. So I knew, I thought ahead, and I knew that was not going to be an option. Cats can't go outside in the mountains. Pretty much they can't, or they can often be killed pretty quickly by wildlife. So I knew I had to think ahead. And so even though we were in the suburbs and we had a backyard, I told him, it's not an option. And I'm sorry, but this is what I have to do. I have to keep you safe. And so it was a constant struggle. There would be battles at the door. You know, he would run to the door. He would try and dart out. Sometimes he would get out. If he got out, he would stay out all night. I would panic. I would worry. I wouldn't sleep well. There was never complete peace or mutual understanding between he and I about living as an indoor cat. And that was something I learned to accept, was just going to have to be. I would let him have his upsetness, and I would tell him about my upsetness, and we would try and make peace as best as we could. So sure enough, I did move to the mountains a few years later. And in less than a year of living in the mountains, one night Buño did his antics, and he snuck out, and I didn't know it because I had something in my hands, and he darted out the door, and I didn't see. And I was actually walking to my neighbor's. And I went over to my neighbor's, and I'm in the mountains with acreage around all of the houses and a couple acres on my land. And I went next door, and while I was in her house, she said, "That looked like Buño outside on my deck." And I said, "What?" And it's nighttime, and it's in the mountains. And I looked out, and I got a glimpse of him, and I, instead of panicking and rushing out the door, I just opened the door, and I called him. And, of course, he ran. He was having way too much fun. Well, unfortunately, my boy was killed that night. And it just took the one time. And I always remember that. My heart will forevermore be sad about that. And I also know that that was, in a way, his destiny. Not to necessarily be killed, but he was never, ever going to be the kind of cat that was peaceful about being an indoor-only cat. And he was only 9 years old when he died, and I just felt terrible about it. But at the same time, I had to embrace it and accept it, because I did everything I could to keep him safe. He accidentally got out. If a cat takes off on you outside, unlike a dog, they're much harder to find and to get, especially in the dark. And I knew, based on his behaviors from before, once he was out at night, I wasn't going to be able to find him or get him, and all I could do was pray until morning. And that time it didn't work. And so I share this because I understand each and every person that's listening whose heart might not be settled with the lifestyle they have for their domesticated cat. It's not a real easy decision to keep a cat as an indoor-only cat. However, it does save their lives most of the time. And I don't regret that I kept him as an indoor-only kitty, and I don't regret that he accidentally got out because it was an accident, and I don't blame myself. I have sadness and grief around it, and I've processed that over the years. But I don't stay stuck in it, and that is something animals don't want us to do, is to stay stuck. So I learned from it, and I share that with you, and I share that with clients, because I want them to understand there is no perfect, but you do what you can as best as you can. Now, if we switch to present day, I now live in Oregon, and I'm in the suburbs, and Merlin is always wanting to go outside. I never let him outside in the mountains when I lived in Colorado before we moved here. But my compromise now is I have a fenced-in backyard and a deck and a nice backyard, and it's small and tidy and easy to find him. And so I go out, and I let him be out with me, and that's my compromise. Now, does he try and take off once in a while? You betcha, because he's a cat. And I bust him at it, and when he does, I say, "You're in the house. Forget it. You just lost your privileges for the day." That's what I choose to do. Some people can't be bothered with that. Some people panic, and they say, "What if I don't see him go over the fence in time?" I'm confident I'm watching him. So it's all about what works with your particular situations. I think they should be supervised. I think they should be kept safe. And I think they also are going to have their journey. So it's a juggling act, and you do the best that you can. Another example of that is one of my clients rescued a kitty from a no-kill shelter. He had spent 6 years in a cage, 6 years in a very small cage. They said he didn't get along with the other cats, so they couldn't let him out and about. And a lot of cats don't get along with an abundance of cats, and they overstimulate when there's too many cats in a small space. So he indeed said, "No, I didn't get along. If they let me out of the cage, I was in a small room with, you know, 30, 40, 50 cats at a time, and it blew him away. He didn't know how to behave, so he got panicky, and he felt vulnerable, and he would start to attack." So he spent 6 years in a cage, and this client of mine rescued him when her elder kitty passed, and she picked him in particular because they said he was feisty and ornery and might not like her dog, and she said, "I'll take him. And if it doesn't work, of course I'll bring him back." And their request was, "Do not let him outside." And she brought him home, and she has a little house, and she brought him home, and he begged her and begged her and begged her to go outside. So she called me, and she said, "I'm in dilemma. I want to give this boy whatever he wants, because he spent 6 years in a cage. If he just wants freedom and some fun outside, even if he ends up losing his life, wouldn't that be better than for him to see the out of doors and finally get a taste of it from the window and not be able to have any of it? And her previous cat was an indoor-outdoor kitty who was very well behaved, who never took off, who never got in fights. So she was lucky with that boy, and she was hoping this one could do the same. So we had a consultation with him. We explained to him what the options were, and he said, I must have my freedom. And so she came to peace with, I will give you your freedom, but we are on a busy road, and you have to stay away from cars. And turns out, you know, I've talked to her recently, and it's been about 8 months since she's adopted him. He hangs out in the front yard. He greets people as they walk by. He loves his life. He has neighbor friends two houses down that he visits, but he never wanders. He never fights. And I believe that her peace around it does help with emanating her expectations of what her cats are allowed to do. And it gives her such joy to give him such freedom. And even though the shelter said, we don't want him to go outside, she felt she wanted to honor him. And she felt keeping a cat locked in a cage for 6 years was wrong. And although she understood why they did it, she felt it was wrong, and that's why she rescued him. And he's having a great life, and he's completely respecting his boundaries. So there's yet another example of indoor and outdoor dilemma. And cats will get in fights when they're outside, and that's an important thing, because when cats get in fights, they almost always get sick. They almost always get an infection from scratches or bites, which people need to realize if you let your kitty be outside and they are a fighter, then you have responsibility. You have responsibility of paying for your vet bills, perhaps paying for your neighbor's vet bills if they go into their yard and attack an animal. I've had clients whose kitties have gone in and gone into other people's homes through the cat door and attacked another kitty in his own home. So once you let them out, their personality shifts and changes a little bit. I know that happens with Merlin. So I just tell Merlin, I don't like when you get like that. You're coming back inside. You're starting to look wild-eyed. That's not what this is about. It's about a chance to touch the earth, hang out with me, have some fun. So not all kitties can handle it. They trigger into more of a wild mode. And some kitties are very, very happy to be inside. My other cat, Sophia, she'll step out onto the deck real gingerly and just look around and maybe lay in the sun and roll around. But the second the wind blows or I step up, you know, onto the deck or make any sound, she bolts right back in the house. I mean, her safety zone is the house, which I am so grateful for, that I never have to watch her because she will never, ever take off. I just know that about her personality. So there are those kind of kitties out there, too. But you have to look at each individual circumstance and just know the challenges that are out there and the responsibilities that are out there. And then when we flip to inside life only, which I think is a very wonderful way to keep animals safe. However, one fault of that is sometimes people forget that they're bored. And often cats that live indoors only, that have the same life, you often hear people say, well, all he does is sleep. Well, he sleeps because he's bored. Humans do that too. And when humans are sad, depressed, bored, grieving, what do? They sleep. And so for a cat who's of a younger age, and I don't consider cats elders, as some vets will say, they're elders by the age of 7 or 10. Or I don't agree. I believe most cats, once upon a time, lived very healthy, long lives up till 20. My last kitty who passed was 23. And so I believe if we are keeping them healthy and whole, they should live a nice, long life. So if you have a 3-year-old or a 5-year-old or an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old kitty, whatever, and all they do is sleep, you have to ask yourself, what quality of life am I offering these kitties? There's simple solutions to that, to offer happiness and joy into their world. Bird feeders are one way. Some people say, but isn't that torture to put bird feeders outside the windows? And my answer is no, because you know what? It's more the thrill of the hunt for a cat than it is the actual kill. And even though they can't catch it, they're not inside thinking, I wish I could get it, I wish I could get it. They love watching their movements. My cats, I have a kitty bed that I put in the window on purpose so they can watch the bird feeders. And they love it. They'll watch and watch and watch. It's something to stimulate their brain. It's something for them to concentrate on. They don't walk away frustrated and angry and grumpy. They walk away feeling enjoyed. You know, I just had some entertainment. I enjoyed that. So know that activities outside can be fun for them to watch through the windows. And try and set up kitty beds or something where they have a spot. Like I had one client say, well, the only place where the sun comes in is my bedroom, and my dresser's near the window. So I say, well, then, are you willing to give up the top of your dresser? I know the top of the dresser is usually for, you know, perfumes or brushes or whatever, But are you willing to put a kitty bed up there and let your kitty have it, since that's the sunny spot and that's his only world? That's all he has access to. He doesn't get to go out the door every day like you do and get in the car and go do things to feel stimulated. And she said, absolutely, I never thought of that. I'm fine with that. And she set up a little table next to it to put her things on. She was fine with that. So sometimes if we just think outside the box of look around your circumstances in your home and what do you have that they already are enjoying, what locations, what activities, how can you enhance those, as well as what can you do to create new things? Most people that have kitties know that newness can happen pretty easily. You come home from the grocery store, you toss a paper bag on the floor, oh boy, they're thrilled. And so don't forget to do that. You know, anytime I get a box, I leave the box out for a few days. Anytime I get have something in a paper bag, though I use reusable bags all the time now, so every so often I'll bring a bag out for them, a paper bag from the cupboard, and I'll bring it out for them. Because to them it's like, oh boy, this is new. And we might look and say, it's just a bag. What is so thrilling about a bag? Doesn't matter. Let them have their perspective and their world and their fun. Keep toys safe. Like, there are kitties that will chew strings. There are kitties that, you know, will swallow things and get into danger. So make sure you have safe toys. But newness, and sometimes people will say, well, I have lots of toys lying around. And I say, and what do you do with those toys? Well, they'll play with them if they want, right? No, they need interaction. Just like if there was a kickball in your backyard and nobody kicking it, would you just all of a sudden go out and kick it? Or would you wait until someone came maybe and they started kicking it and you said, hey, you want to play some kickball? You would all of a sudden start up the play. So they need us to start up the play too. I will often run up and down hallways with my kitties or up and down stairs. They love that. They love chasing. They love darting. They love being startled. Sometimes I'll come out of the bathroom and I'll throw my, and my kitties are hiding around the corner or something, and I'll throw my arms up and go, whoa, and make a scary noise, and they dart away, and they just love that. It's thrilling. Now, they're not shy, timid, vulnerable kitties, so these are outgoing kitties. You wouldn't do it with the shy ones. But sometimes they just love the thrill, and they love going to the edge. And so new beds, new kitty beds, which could, you know, you don't have to go spend money on one at a store if you don't want to. Just fold an old blanket or go to, you know, the secondhand stores and get an old quilt and wash it and fold that up. And you'll be surprised how much they love a new something, even though it might be laying in the same window spot. But to them it's new and it feels different and it offers them something different. Just like if you've been sick and you've been cooped up in your house for a week or two, boy, do you want to get outside. And you want to do anything. You want to go out to eat. You want to go visit a friend. You're even happy to drive to the grocery store because you're starting to feel a little stir crazy. So think about your kitties and think about their world inside and what can you do to prevent them from feeling stir crazy. Okay. Now, cats vary as much as people do. To understand them is to learn them as individuals. So as we've heard already from Merlin, and a common comment I hear from cats is, don't expect me to be consistent or predictable. I just can't, because that's not who I am. That's not what my species does. So sometimes people will say, you know, my cat has always loved this food, always. And I do a few different flavors, and one day my cat looked at me like I had put poison in the bowl. Well, maybe they're saying, you know what, I'm just not in the mood for that anymore. Could we think about change? And that doesn't mean they've been unhappy with it up till that point. It just means they've decided that day they're ready for change. We do that too. You know, is there something that you used to love, maybe pizza, and now you think, it just doesn't do it for me anymore. I don't really eat pizza much anymore. It's not my thing. So sometimes they change as well in regards to their preferences and their desires and their needs. So they want us to be flexible, if nothing else. Cats want us to be flexible. So sometimes you may not understand why they're changing or why they're asking for what they need. Maybe just let go of trying to understand all the time and just go with the flow and say, well, I don't get it. I don't know why this is what you're doing. You know, I've never seen you play with a ball before, and now you're playing with one, and you're 12 years old, and I've never in 12 years seen you play with a ball. I don't understand why you're playing with a ball. And if they could, they'd look up and say, would you just shut up and play with the ball with me? Don't try and figure it out. Don't try and understand it, because they don't. And they'd like us to not spend so much energy trying to figure it out all the time. They also request that we let them grow and change, even if it confuses us, because they are on a spiritual journey too. Every being on the planet has a spirit in it, and every being is on a spiritual journey. That's my philosophy and my perspective, and I do believe that animals come here with their spiritual journey. And sometimes their spiritual journey is going to involve change, and we have to go with the flow. Now, that does not mean we can't keep them safe For example, if we have a kitty that's always come and gone through the kitty door and always been good and always comes when he's called and never leaves the yard and is just so great, and all of a sudden you see him down the block and he's been in a cat fight, instead of thinking, oh, that's it, we're through, we can't have this outside life anymore, you've blown it, then you just say to him, I don't know what's going on for you. I don't know what called you down there. You can work with an animal communicator and see if there's a purpose behind it. You know, maybe there was a cat, or maybe there was something that drew them down there. But it's okay to explain to them, that doesn't work for me. We need to get back on track here. So it's okay for you to have your needs to keep them safe and happy and healthy and whole, but to not let them go so astray that it's out of alignment, but to allow them to have some flexibility and some change. So every circumstance, obviously, is going to be different, and I could name numerous ones, but they're all going to be different depending on your world with your kitties. But do know that they are going to grow and change as beings through their lifetime as well. And they also say, let me be me. Let me be who I am. They have their own individual personalities, just like humans do. So we have humans in the world. We have one person you work with that talks all the time, and they're just so outgoing, and they are always laughing and life of the party. You have another person that you work with that hardly ever comes out of their cubicle, and you barely know them, and you've worked with them for years, and they're just so quiet and reserved. It doesn't make either one of those people more important than the other, better than the other. It just means they are who they are. So we need to remember that about our cats. Yes, they have histories. Perhaps they've had a bad history. Perhaps we've saved them from bad circumstances. Perhaps we don't know all the details of their circumstances, but we know it was bad, etc. And sure, that's probably influenced them. With cats, it influences them more with dogs. They're not quite as resilient as far as trusting humans again or trusting households again. And so they are important to match up for your lifestyle. So, for example, if you find out, oh, here's a kitty in the shelter, and they know its story. It had a bunch of kids in the house, and they weren't good with the cat, and the mom said the cat was, you know, hit and smacked and hair pulled, and she just said, it's not right. We're going to put her into a shelter. Well, the last thing they should do is adopt that kitty out to a busy household with a big family, because a kitty's not going to know how to quite trust it energetically. Could be very loving children that never hit it, never hurt it, but that cat energetically, when it's in that kind of situation, is going to trigger into memory and perhaps not be able to calm down or feel as safe and may hide under a bed. So if you have a kitty that's had experiences that were hard, don't relive them, don't keep talking about them, don't tell everybody about them, but do help them to try and feel safe and come out of their shell. Many cats shift and change their personalities, but it's slow. Takes them time to trust again. And just know that for a kitty to go and hide under the bed once in a while, or to go off and sleep once in a while, that's how they turn off, because they are like a live antenna as they go through the world. And they don't turn off if they're out and about in the living room, in the kitchen, in the backyard, wherever they're out and about. They don't turn off. So they are very energetic beings. For example, what happens when you move your furniture around and the cat walks into the room for the first time? People talk about this a lot. They say, oh my gosh, the cat freaked out as if I was torturing it, or as if it had never seen the room before and all I did was move the couch, table, and chairs. And what happens for cats, because they emanate, if you can kind of think of like sonar or radar coming off of their body, they emanate energy off of their body in every direction when they walk through the world. And, you know, there is the expression about if you cut a cat's whiskers, they won't be able to walk. I've seen cats whose whiskers have been singed and such, and they can walk. So I don't know where that came from, and I'm sure it does affect them. But more importantly, it's not just the whiskers. The whiskers give them a periphery sensation, which is important. But if you could take that periphery sensation from the face all the way back to the tip of the tail, they are peripherally sensing all the time. So if you could just imagine kind of like a pulsating wah, it's this pulsating energy going off their body, and they feel everything in their world. If they're a kitty that's pretty confident and feels safe, they just strut through the room, and it's fine. If they're a shy kitty, they kind of hunker down a little bit. They want to be closer to the ground. That grounds them. That makes them feel a little safer. They may slink, or they may walk slower, or they may dart from one safe spot to the next because of how much stimulation they can or can't handle energetically. So when you change the furniture in a room, they walk in, and here's this emanating energy that always bounced to the right off the couch, to the left off the table, and forward off of the chair, and now they're in different locations, And it's almost like they're drunk because they're just so used to where the energy emanates, and it's normal and it's natural and it's familiar, and it bounces back and it tells them, wrong, couch is over to the left now, table's in front. And so what happens is their sensory system says, oh my gosh, we have a problem. And they immediately get almost tipsy. Sometimes they'll flatten. Sometimes they'll just stop and stare. And it's not because I've never seen the couch in that location as much as it is I've never felt the couch in that location. And then they can recalibrate. And most of the time they do fine within a short period of time. This is also why when we take them places like to the vet or we bring them home for the vet, people say, why when I bring him home from the vet? He should be so happy to be home. He should just kick back. But he runs and he hides, and the vet didn't do anything harmful or scary. He just went for a checkup or whatever. Didn't even get his blood drawn, you know. And the people were nice there, and he wasn't freaked out at the vet. Why is he freaked out when he comes back? Because his energy field is overstimulated, and he needs downtime immediately. He needs recalibration time. So he's probably going to go tuck away, take a big old nap, recalibrate, and then come out and go, whew, okay, I'm back, I can do this. So they're extremely sensitive when it comes to energies. You put them in the car, and, you know, some kitties, I know for Merlin, because I just did this long drive from Colorado to Oregon with my move last year, he, in the car, was screaming and hitting on his crate and just hating it, and so I had a harness for him and a leash in case he got out of the car by accident. And so I let him out on my lap when I was on the highway and driving, and then I would put him back in the crate when I was going to hop in and out of the car. And as soon as I'd let him out of the crate, he walked around and purred and did, you know, made his little sounds, curled up on my lap. He was as peaceful as could be. Some kitties are the opposite. Don't make me be out and about. Don't make me see the fast things flying by on the road. Just tuck me into a crate, put me down low, keep me safe. I don't want to see it. I don't want to feel it. So they can be very different. You take them to the vet, same things. Sometimes they don't want to come out of that crate. It's their safety zone. Of course, they can be scared of what's going to happen. You know, let's say they had a surgery last month and they're coming back to, you know, get a checkup and they're remembering. So, of course, there's all of those other components. But this is just in regards to energetically in general. When you take them to the vets, the first thing they notice is the energy in the vet's office. So they, if somebody is in pain in another room, they feel it. If somebody has died recently, they feel it. If there has been a panic of somebody trying to help with an emergency situation with an animal, they feel it. So remember, when they first walk through the door, what I always do with my cats when I take them to the vet is I sit down. Obviously, you're going to wait in the waiting room usually. And I sit down, and I just send them love. I just imagine sending them love. So as they're assessing energetically and they get tough information like, oh, my gosh, somebody died here recently. Oh, my gosh, there's somebody crying in the other room. Or, oh, my gosh, there's a cat in a lot of pain in the back cage, you know, just got out of surgery. As they're receiving all that info, because they're going to receive it, you can't prevent them from receiving it, just send them love and calming energy so it can help balance things out. So just know that they're not just freaking out because it's a vet and they might be poked, but they are feeling everything at the vets. And I want to give an example, too, of how sensitive animals can be in our home settings and how they can sometimes shift and change. I have a client that rescued two kitties from a shelter. They didn't come into the shelter together, but they bonded at the shelter. And so she went to adopt one, and the shelter said, would you please adopt both? We really don't want to split them up. And so she said, okay, I will. But she had two other cats, and she wasn't sure if her other two cats were going to adapt well to two new cats. So she decided she was going to let the two new ones be on one level of the house and the other established cats be on the other level. For however long it took for the two new ones from the shelter, who had been in the shelter quite a while, to get established and feel safe and feel grounded, and for everybody to kind of feel and sense before they met each other that there were new energies in the household. And I thought that was a very respectful way to do it. So she called me, and we did a consult, and we helped all the cats know what was going on and who was where and who the new cats were, and told the old cats, established cats, that we were going to honor and do things slowly, and they would meet them one at a time, and we explained their story of how they'd been in a shelter a long time, and the mom fell for their love, and she wanted to love them, and they needed her, and we just told it all like it was to help everybody be on the same page. And she said everything was going really well, until one day, I'm sorry, jump ahead here. She had then introduced them later. They were all cohabitating just fine. They tended to migrate, the two new ones to their level and the two established ones to their level, but they could all be in the kitchen and eat at the same time. So she said everything within about a month was just so smooth and so wonderful. She was so happy. And then one day, her two established cats got in a fight about something. Had nothing to do with the newcomers, but they got in a fight, and they screamed and yelled at each other and hissed and got in this whole fight. And that night, she was petting the other two cats who were not in the fight, who weren't even near the fight, and they started fighting with one another and hissing at each other. And she called to say, "What is going on?" She knew why the fight happened with the other cats, but she had no clue why this was happening. They were responding to the fight energy in the household. So they are so sensitive that sometimes they don't even, it's not logical. You would like to think they're looking at each other going, but you're the kitty I love, and I didn't fight with you, and you didn't fight with me, so we're okay. But it's not always logical. It's one started to groom the other one, and it made the other one feel vulnerable just because his sensory system said, be careful, something's up in the house. And when the kitty came in to groom him, which he always did, he just panicked and hissed at him, and then when he hissed at him, the other one swatted at him, and then he swatted back, and they got into a little tiny brawl, nothing major, but it was shocking to her. So they were responding to the energy elsewhere in the house. This also ties in when people say, I take one cat to the vet, I bring him home, and my other cat starts hissing at him, won't let him in the room, won't sleep on the same bed for days. What is going on? This is the kitty that he loves, you know. Well, they come home with all kinds of energy on their energy field from the vet. They come home with perhaps worry of their own and fear of their own, but then they don't smell like themselves and they don't feel like them. So the established cat that's been waiting at home sees them almost like a stranger. Like, I don't know who the heck you are. You look like my brother, but you don't act like him. You don't smell like him, and you're freaking me out. And so logically, the human says, what is going on? This is your brother. You love him. You adore him. But throw logic out the window when it comes to energetic responses. And cats can't kick their logic in right away because they're going to pay attention to their energetic messages and their sensory messages first before their head starts to assess and decide. So we have to be patient with situations of change. And so just be gentle with it and don't expect them to get along and just say, yeah, this must be hard. He smells like the vet. I know. He needs some rest time. I'll give you some extra love. But that is your brother, so I didn't bring a stranger home. And just kind of talk them through it and allow them the time that they need to readjust or recalibrate, as I like to think of it, because that is truly what they're doing energetically. So they are very sensitive to the world and all of the energies in it. They often feel extremely vulnerable in situations where, of course, they're going to be hurt or harmed or caught. But one area of vulnerability that I think is very important to talk about is decline of cats. And personally, myself, as well as many veterinarians that I know, believe it is inhumane to declaw cats. It was created for humans and only for humans. I don't know how it was created, nor do I ever want to even learn how it was created. How somebody decided, let's cut the tips of all of their fingers off to make the people happy, I don't know. Cats do need to scratch. And if we've chosen to have a cat and we've chosen to have them be indoors only, then we have to do our best to give them places to scratch or simply trim their nails. It's not a big deal if you teach your cats this is what we have to do to keep my furniture good so I'm happy and to keep your paws whole so you're happy. So if you have cats that, first of all, you declawed in the past and didn't know any better, apologize to them. Don't feel guilty and bad. You didn't know any better. So you simply apologize to them and say, I'm sorry that that happened to you. I always apologize to cats that I meet who have been declawed, and I say to them, I'm so sorry that a human did that to you. And then I help them understand why. They thought that that was a way to keep you from scratching things, and it's something we do here, and we're working on changing it, I tell them. So you can apologize to them and don't, you know, worry that beyond that. Just apologize. It's a done deal. There's nothing you can do. But if your kitty's personality changed after a decline, that's not uncommon because they now feel much more vulnerable. And there are things that you can do. I would suggest you work with an animal communicator to talk it through with the animal and see what the animal needs to feel more whole and safe in the world. There are many nice things that you can do, from certain kinds of petting to flower essences, etc., to help them. And if you are with a kitty that you adopted that was already declawed, still apologize to them on behalf of humankind and just say, we're so sorry. We just didn't know any better, and we're working on it. And I always tell them, I'm trying to help this not happen to kitties in the future. because it is not humane. It is often very uncomfortable, if not painful, and it often leaves them feeling defenseless. And for a cat to feel defenseless causes a cat to act or behave differently. And then there are some that get declawed and they're happy as can be and they're fine and they say, whatever, I know it's what you had to do. So every individual cat is different because of their personalities and their own sense of security and their own homes and lifestyle, etc. So it's not always a bad thing. But I do want to remind people, if you have a cat that's been declawed, they often feel much more vulnerable in the world than others that have not been declawed. And there are kind things that you can do to help them calm down some of that feeling of vulnerability and have a healthier life. Okay. So what I wanted to talk a little bit more about, and then we're going to go into some questions, is I just wanted to talk about remembering to learn them as the individuals that they are. So in my household, for example, I have Merlin. And Merlin is very profound, and he loves people, and he loves to teach, and he loves to expand my horizons, and he loves to get me thinking, and he loves to teach me about felines, and ask me to think outside the box, and think from their perspective. And he's just a very wise and persistent guide of mine, which I completely appreciate. And then my other kitty, Sophia, is kind of like a little pixie. If you saw the Harry Potter movies, and in one of them were the little blue pixies in the cage, and they got out in the classroom, and they had big old eyes, and they got out and went hee-hee-hee-hee, and they were into wreaking havoc and having a blast. That's Sophia. Sophia just loved life. She's very lovey-dovey when she wants to be, and she's very irritable and sensitive and overreactive when she wants to be or just is. And so I go with the flow with her. I never know if I pick her up and cuddle her, if she's going to look at me like I'm torturing her with big eyes and leap out of my arms and then run around the house and play instead, or if she's going to start rubbing her head on me and settle in and have a nice, sweet little nap. And I just let her entertain me. I don't expect her to be like Merlin, and I don't expect Merlin to be like her. So remember, each of your kitties in your life are of their own way of being. So sometimes when you're trying to figure out how come they do what they do, and how can we change what they do, start by figuring out who are they, how do they like to exist, what are they sensing and feeling in their world, what is their lifestyle like, and now, how can I understand why do they do what they do, and now, how can I get them to understand what I need them to shift or change. Cats are willing to change. Cats will change quite a bit, quite quickly, as a matter of fact. So when I have issues with cats, for example, and I'm going to go into the first question that I had in writing because this ties in with change, and that is there a standard reason why cats pee or poop outside the box? Number one most common reason is because it's dirty. We humans are inexcusably not on top of our game if we don't clean that box at least daily. I am shocked how many people tell me they clean their litter box once a week. Shocked. Would you step into that litter box? Would you step into a very tiny space full of urine and feces and try and dig, because that's what cats do, a little bit of a toilet, a little bit of a hole, and order to potty and risk your nice, clean, tidy self touching chunks of pee and poop? I mean, we really have to think about what we're expecting of our cats. We ask them to live inside. We ask them to tolerate not being outside. We ask them to potty in a tiny little rectangular item. It's so against their natural way, and yet they do it for us. So the least we can do is clean that box daily. If you have more than one cat, it's often said, people will say, vets will recommend, etc., to have a litter box per cat. Now, I have a small home and two cats, and I'm home a lot because I work from home, so I just clean their box twice a day. And sometimes I forget and do it once a day, but I never, ever go more than once a day because it's pretty darn full. And if I do go more than once a day, if I forget, if I space it out or I've been sick or something, I always apologize to them. I say, I'm so sorry, this box is nasty. I'm so sorry, you guys. Please bear with me. And I also welcome them to remind me. I tell them, go ahead and remind me. And for myself, I remind myself with when I brush my teeth at night, the next thing I do is clean the litter box, wash my hands, go to bed. So I just created a scenario. I know I'm going to brush my teeth every night. So as long as I know I'm going to brush my teeth, I know I'm going to clean that litter box for sure. So that's a do-or-die time when I definitely do it. But I often will do it in the morning or midday or something when I'm thinking of it or they show it to me or I hear them in it, etc. So number one reason cats will potty outside of the box is it's dirty. And please don't consider them finicky or picky if all they want is a clean potty zone, because that is actually very respectable that they want a clean space. If they were outside, they'd pick a bush. They might pick the same bush, but they'd never pick the same location under that bush. And they love to go to new places, and they love it to feel like the earth. So don't use litter box stuff that is good for your nose and terrible for theirs, that smells like flowers or springtime or whatever these god-awful chemicals are, because number one, they put their face to the litter. They have to smell the litter. They would smell the earth before they potty. Sometimes it even stimulates the bowels to go. They smell when they're done to make sure they're not sick. They then smell so they know where to bury it, et cetera. So you're asking them to shove their face into chemicals over and over and over again if you use scented litters. Use a natural litter. And a lot of the cats, unfortunately, when you go to the natural pet supply store, they now have pellets, and they have paper, and they have all these very creative and natural, which is good, but not natural to cats. Cats don't like those pellets most of the time. It doesn't feel like the earth. It feels funny. It doesn't cover things well. They like to cover it and leave and have it look gone. They like their business to be complete. And so just notice if you switch to a litter because someone told you it would be good or it's more natural. Pay attention to how your cats are liking it or not liking it. And if you find them avoiding the box, definitely go back to a different kind of litter. And I tend to use a clay litter. I know that some vets feel that that's not good if the kitties are going to ingest it. I've never had a problem with it. I use a natural clay litter that is big chunks that doesn't stick all over their feet. And I also have a couple places where they walk when they come out of the box to wipe it off of their feet. So it's important to do what works for you and what feels safe, but most importantly, what the kitties like. Pain is another main reason kitties stop using their box. Sometimes people say, my cat has always been meticulous, and now he's 14, and he's just all of a sudden not pooping in the box anymore. Well, if you can imagine, a 14-year-old might be equivalent to, I don't know, I don't do the, you know, the how they average out those ages, but let's say a 70-year-old. Is a 70-year-old walking around the same way a 30-year-old walks around? Absolutely not. They walk slower. They might lean on things. They might use a cane. They might use a walker. They might have to brace themselves. Do they get up and down from a toilet the same way they did when they were 30? Absolutely not. So a cat can't sometimes walk into a box real comfortably. They also can't, in a smaller space, turn around enough times and position themselves correctly and get it going. So sometimes they'll walk to the box intending, but they'll poop right outside the box because the box is too cumbersome to them. So you may have to go to a larger box or an uncovered box. Sometimes I tell people to get like a sweater bin or something. They even have at like home building stores, they have cement mixing bins, which cost $5, and they're rectangular and black. They're ugly, but if you put it in the laundry room or basement or something, who cares? But they're bigger, and they're longer, and they're wider, and it gives the cat more space. And I also recommend that you don't put quite as much litter in it. Sometimes people think cats love litter, and I have two cats that love to bury, so I do put a good amount of litter in. But when they get older, it's like going to the beach. When you go to the beach, if your legs are tired or sore or weak or vulnerable, you're going to walk on the sand that's the most compacted. You're not going to walk on the sand that's loose and wobbly and makes you feel unsure-footed. So with older cats, I tell people, shrink it down to like about 1.5 to 2 inches of litter so it's more firm for them. So when they walk in and they think about getting ready to go and they have to, you know, use their paw to scoop a little bit, that they still feel stable with their other legs. So it can be pain, it can be arthritis, it can be other issues, of course, as well. Dirty box is number one, pain is number two, most common reasons when I work with animals. And then, of course, there can be infections, and there can also be they're trying to show us that there's a problem. And so sometimes they'll walk up and pee in the sink and say, Mom, I got a problem. Can you please notice? And sure enough, the human sees a little blood in the urine. Well, they have a urinary tract infection. So sometimes they can be actually presenting information to us. They can also pee outside the box more in a marking way where they're trying to help us if they're worried about the humans or the household, if there's been a problem. Sometimes we are upset. Sometimes we've had a death in the family or we've had, you know, a loss of a job or something's gone wrong with our child at school or whatever. And the animal will sometimes hop up and pee on our bed or pee on our clothes. And that's a way of saying, I'm helping. I'm putting my scent here. I'm trying to help ground us. So it's okay to be upset and not like it, and we can talk to them about not liking it and what else they can do, but just know they're doing what cats would do. If they were living outside and they were a bunch of lions or tigers together and they felt anything threatening the energy of their den, then they would mark their turf to make it feels safer for everybody living there. So sometimes they're going to do it for us. And then also they will mark their territory if there's an outside kitty that's harassing them. And sometimes they'll mark on the door. Sometimes they'll just run around the house and then mark. So do your best to keep outside kitties away from your inside kitties' windows and views. And there's a variety of ways that you can do that, that you can work with an animal communicator or your vet on. Okay, and then the next question that came in is, does it give cats satisfaction to startle people or jolt us from a mental rut? Dogs seem happy to just have us around so they can love us and add to life's enjoyment, but it seems like cats have a different agenda, but maybe it's different for each individual, cat and person. And the answer is yes, it is individual and it is different. And sometimes we have spiritual agreements with our loved ones. We may have someone in our life that is here to jolt us and not let us get depressed and not let us beat ourselves up in our heads or be mean to ourselves with our thoughts going through our heads. Sometimes it's their agreement to come into this world to get us on a better track of life or to love us through some tough times. There are animals that come in and they'll come through for an era. They'll come for perhaps good times, like the birth of a child and the raising of a child. And once the child is older, the cat says, I'm complete. I did a good job. I helped this human become a mom and raise her child and have a family. And, you know, often the human will say, I couldn't have done it without my cat. He was my one true steady thing when everything got hard or scary or bad. And then they're also here to help us if we're going to have an era where we have tragedies or challenges or tough times, and they'll help us through that. So you betcha they're going to not let us beat ourselves up or get depressed or stay stuck because they love us and because they want to help us. And they often have a purpose, and that is the meaning of their life, is to be with us. And what I would like to do now is just read one more question that I had previously and then ask for a live question. And this one is a good one. She says, I always see vets and people scruff their cats. Is it okay to scruff a cat, or is it somehow bad or traumatic for them? So what she means by that, I'm assuming most people know, but just in case, is when we grab the back of their neck, the fur and the skin on the back of the neck. Now, I know I was taught when I was a kid, I was taught this is how you pick up a cat, because that's how the mama picks up the kittens. But I have to say, a mama picking up kittens that weigh a lot less, and it's a mom-kitten relationship, is a lot different than going up and maybe trying to pick up your 8-pound, 10-pound, 12-pound cat like that. It's not very kind, and it's not normal. So scruffing them to move them around is not good. Now, if you have a cat that might scratch or bite, and you've learned that that's the best way to get them real quickly and get them into the crate because you got to get to the vet, then sometimes you do what you have to do. And no, it's not gosh-awful, and it's not terrible and hurting them and harming them. But when it comes to going to the vets, I actually cringe sometimes when I see it. I know that what's happening first and foremost is the human, it's usually the assistant, like the vet will need to check something or give an injection or do something, and so the assistant or the tech will immediately scruff the cat and pin it down. Now, the first reason they are doing that is so they can get their job done, not for the betterment of the cat, but the job they're trying to get done is for the betterment of the cat. So we allow it, and that's okay, and it's necessary. And cats can be of all different, you know, mannerisms when they're at the vets. They can rip people's arms open, and so I do understand why the healthcare providers have to do it. However, not all cats need to have that done. But more importantly, just explain to your cat, like you can be standing there and just say to them in your mind or even out loud, just grin and bear this. They're just holding you still so they can get the injection in you. Or she just has to hold you down right now so the vet can look in your eye or whatever. If you often just explain why this behavior is happening to the animal, then they can tolerate it. But if you could imagine, if somebody just all of a sudden, like let's say you go to the doctor's, and they're going to give you an injection, and all of a sudden the nurse walks in and pins you down on the table and says, you got to hold still, well, you would have probably preferred an explanation and a bit of a warning. And then if they say, well, we have to hold you down because it's going to be a knee-jerk reaction and your leg might jerk and kick out and you could hurt your leg or hurt the doctor, and you say, okay, thank you for explaining. I'll do my best to hold my leg still, and you can hold it down too. So it's okay when there's explanation most of the time. But I don't find it as a natural thing to most cats. They don't particularly care for it, though it's not, you know, awful and hurting them terribly. But when it comes to the veterinary world, there is purpose behind it. But you can, instead of standing there feeling bad as you watch it done to your cat, just stand there and imagine explaining, or even imagine what they're about to do. I love the vets that'll actually show the syringe and say, I have to give you an injection now. I love when a vet explains to an animal ahead of time what they're about to do. That's all they often want. I recently had to take Merlin to the vet, and I thought he had a urinary tract infection. And I wasn't sure, because he's my own animal. When you're the animal communicator, it's really hard to know with your own animals. So I thought I'd better be safe than sorry, and I'll take him in. And I just told him what they were going to do, and I said, you know, they have to put a needle in, and they're going to extract urine from your bladder because we couldn't catch it ahead of time. And he laid there and purred the whole time. And they said, we have never, ever had a cat purr the entire time the needle was in their bladder extracting a large quantity of urine. And I just smiled, and I thought, well, you know. And so I said to them afterwards, if you explain to the animals more, I think you might be pleasantly surprised. You really might. And this was a very nice vet, new to me. And she was very kind, and she did explain things to them. But I think the techs could also explain it, too. And actually, she has now sent her staff to my classes. So that's wonderful. People can learn how to best help animals understand what's happening to them, then especially cats who are so very sensitive energetically and have a variety of personalities. We can keep them on track with the best possible outcome of whatever the situation is. Okay, now what I'm going to do is unmute the phone. Okay, and I would like to welcome Gail. You said you had a question.
Hi, I do. I was wondering about cats feeling entitled, like entitlement. I have two cat companions who sometimes act like they're no more than kind of semi-polite acquaintances. And when one sits someplace where they haven't been before, the other one has to do the same thing, or it seems like they sulk. And I wonder if they're, if the other guy does it, then it's not such a treat for the first one to do it. And how can we deal with that issue of entitlement, or am I misinterpreting it?
Okay, so if I understand correctly, you mean, like, let's say your one kitty discovers a new spot on the back of the sofa, and suddenly the other kitty notices they've discovered that and needs to be on the back of the sofa. Is that what you mean?
Yes, and they're not always...
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, that's okay. They're not doing it to be companionable. It's more of a like a rivalry thing.
Yeah, a competition. Okay. Yes. So first of all, what that is personalities, first and foremost. And secondly, it's also one of the ways in which your indoor kitties have chosen to stimulate things in life. So for them, because they don't typically get in fights, correct?
Correct.
All right. So for them, it's kind of a, well, look what I'm doing. Well, I've never done that before. Well, why are you doing it? Well, because I thought I would. Well, you might want to check it out, but then maybe not because I'm here. And so it can become a way in which they're passing their time, first of all. And it can be, because cats do love newness. They do love newness. That's back to the paper bag thing. It's like it's not that it's a thrilling item. It's just that it's new in the moment. And so, number one, whoever initiates is smart enough to create some newness, who is actually stimulating a bit of a new game for them by finding newness of whatever it is, and then kind of inviting the other one, but kind of in a taunting, teasing way. But that's their personalities and how they choose to play. Now, I know with my two kitties, if one finds something new, the other one kicks back and waits and watches. And then when they're done enjoying it, the other one wants to go explore it on their own. Doesn't try and come in when it's occurring, but I know that with some cats, they do want to come in when it's occurring, and depending on the personality of the cat that comes in second, they might say, you're out of here, it's my turn, and they might boss them around a little bit, but that has to do mostly with personalities, and more importantly, just know that it's about newness and fun, and it's giving them something to do.
Mm. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, and MJ, you had a question.
I do have a curious question. I am fortunate enough to have always had cats that were allowed to be outside because I lived in the country, pampered barn kitties.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hope for some clarification on this dreadful thing, and there I just said it, when these cats bring something that is not all the way dead, a treasure that they have captured, and if I look at them with, oh, God, that little bird is not even dead yet, they look at me as if to say, this doesn't concern you. And they will just torture and flip the mouse and flip the little bird, and I'm just, what really is happening there?
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And what's happening is they're being a cat and you're being a human, and both are okay. Because the human, with a kind heart for animals, can't watch another animal being tortured. And from your perspective, that's torture. And I understand that. And so what I do with kitties, is when people call me about situations like this, and you can do this directly with your cats, is you tell them how hard that is for you to witness. Because they're coming from their perspective, and they're having a good time, and they're being a cat. And that is all fine and dandy. But you have the right to say to them, it bothers me. It's hard for me. It makes me sad. It makes me upset for the animal that's dying slowly. So once you often explain their perspective, as today's talk has all been me explaining cat's perspectives, asking you to understand things differently, you have the same right to explain your perspective to your cats and say, here's the scoop. You know, I don't think it's okay to watch animals die slowly. So you either kill them fast or don't bring them around me. Now, if they're outdoor kitties and they're barn kitties and that's part of their world and they love it and that's their purpose, then you surely can't say, could you stop killing everything and only eat the food I give you? That's probably not going to happen because that's not in their genes and that's not in their purpose and that's not what their world is about. So you don't really have the option of saying don't ever kill anything as an outdoor kitty, but you can come up with compromise. I've had clients over the years who have said, look, I want my kitty to be out in my garden in my backyard and I also want birds. And I say, which do you want more? Because a cat kills birds. And sometimes we have to give up something we want. So I don't think it's a good idea if you have a free-ranging kitty in the backyard. I have bird feeders, but I'm only outside with my kitties supervised. And I always tell the birds when I open the door, I say, cats are coming out, and I make an announcement, and the birds kind of fly away. But I don't think it's fair to expect a bunch of innocent birds to drop and eat from bird feeders and bird baths and have a lovely time in your garden and expect your cat to not be a cat. That's not fair. And I'm not saying you're doing that, MJ, but I do see other clients that expect that from our animals. So we can't expect things of them that aren't realistic. In that situation of the garden, we can't expect them to not want to chase a bird. We can't. They are cats. That is what they do. We can't expect your kitties to not kill something. They are outdoor kitties. That's part of their purpose. That's what they do. But you can tell them, I don't want to see it. I don't want you bringing it around. I don't like it. And so you have the right to come from your perspective. In other words, you're not judging them. You're not saying, that's gross. You're awful for doing it. You're saying, I don't like it. I can't handle it. So make it be about you and explain it to them. And then make a request. I request all of you, when you come around me and you come to be with me, please don't come with animals in your mouth. I don't need them. I appreciate your work, and I think you're doing a great job, but I don't need them presented to me, etc. I had one client who called once, and she said, I don't know what the heck is going on, but suddenly my cat has brought 5 rats to my back door, and she said, and he eats the heads. And so I open my back door every so often, and I go to step out, and there's a decapitated rat on my back step. And she says, it grosses me out. Well, we asked him, first of all, what's up? You've lived here for years. What's up? And he said, they're everywhere. They're all of a sudden everywhere, and all the people are hating it, and I'm helping. So apparently some neighbors, she hadn't noticed them, but some neighbors had been noticing there's rats in the neighborhood, and it was freaking them out, and the cat knew, and he said, I'll take care of it. I'll help, and I'll make sure my mom knows. And it was almost like a warrior gesture to decapitate him, like, I got him, Mom. You see, I got him. And he was so proud of himself, and when I told him, that is so great that you're helping, and it's freaking out your mom. She doesn't like it, and it's really upsetting to her. He said, oh, I didn't know. And she called me or emailed me, I don't remember which, about 3 weeks later and said, not one since we talked. And she said, I know he's still getting some, but he's not bringing them to the back porch, and he's not presenting them. And because we made a big deal out of telling him what a good job you're doing listening and helping the neighbors and all of that, and it's freaking out your mom. And he was shocked. He was like, oh, I didn't know. Okay. So sometimes we just explain what we need, and the animals and the cats especially are very quick to change if we just explain. If we say stuff like, no, don't do that, you know, you can't do that, that's not okay, stop that, etc., they're often going, huh? Because we're not giving them reasons to care. We're not giving them an explanation. We're not honoring who they are and honoring who we are if we just say, don't kill birds. You know, to say don't kill birds to a cat would be like telling me don't listen to animals. It's not an option. I hear them, and it's going to happen. And I would never want to stop hearing animals. Well, they don't want to stop killing birds because they're cats, and it's what they do. And it's not something we have to like. But, you know, at the same time, they often look at us and say, well, you eat chicken. You know, who do you think killed the, you know, that bird had to be killed for you. What are you dreaming? Are you dreaming that life is perfect and no animals are being killed? So sometimes they wonder why we're being of a discrepancy within ourselves and within our own beings. But I do say to that, it's still okay to say, well, you know, you're right, and I don't want dead, bloody, gory things presented to me. I don't like to look at them, see them, or find them, or be startled by them. So do your best to explain what your needs are while you honor them, and it'll be fun to see what outcome you have.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so as we wrap up here, and thank you everybody for listening in on the call and those of you listening to the podcast later, I would like to say that if nothing else, cats want to remain mysterious. We joke about it a lot of times. People will joke and they'll say, you know, what's the expression out there that you tell a dog what to do and he will go do it, tell a cat what to do and he will stare at you like he has no clue what you're talking about. Is it because they're being obstinate? No, it's because they're being cats. We got to remember, first and foremost, they're cats. And they will take things in and they will make changes and they will adjust and they will love us in their way. And it's actually why many of us are so in love with them, because we do like their spontaneity and their flexibility and the ways they change and the way they intrigue us and the way they blow us out of the water sometimes with their habits and behaviors that just we could have never imagined doing ourselves. So we love all of that about them. And remember to marvel at them, observe them, tell them you care, and continue to meet everybody's needs. I wish you all a very harmonious relationship with your kitties. Have a wonderful time now that you've got an expanded horizon around the wonderful feline species. Thank you so much for listening to this talk. And